Okay, it looks like we have started recording, so I'm going to call our meeting to order today on this May 3rd. Going down our agenda is approving the minutes from April 19th. I move to approve the minutes. Is there a second?
I second it.
Great, it's been moved and seconded. Are there any friendly amendments, changes, questions about the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
Minutes are approved. Moving down to our loans today, we have, it looks like, six loans at around $1.7 million. I move to approve the loans.
I move we approve the six loans.
All right, second that.
Do I get to second?
Yes, we're clearly all moving and seconded at the same time, Josh. So, yes, it's been moved and seconded. Rich, can you walk us through what these six loans that we are reviewing in the portfolio today to approve?
You bet, Sarah. Loan number one is to the city of Mosinee to replace some lead water lines, which I was very happy to see. Moving down to loans four and five, the town of Cedarburg is buying some land that is next to their Corb sports complex. What they want is the ability to control the lot by working with a future developer for a complementary use. And then lastly, Evans Creek is building a new town shop and office, and I wanted to let the board know that we have actually two other loans in the pipeline coming up for future approval for our new town halls also. So it appears that towns are moving forward with some much needed construction projects.
So why does Ozaukee County need to have two loans to purchase the land?
They dug the loan number five that they've got to include in the original amount to cover some of the ancillary costs that are involved with purchasing that lot.
I see. So that's just a small, short-term loan. I got it. Thank you.
Right.
Rich, no, I agree with you. I was really encouraged to see what Mosinee was leveraging the State Trust Fund Loan Program for their lead pipes. And I think that, honestly, this is something I've talked about with a few different communities, and it can be replicated to help with financing what we know is a really important project.
I agree.
Any other questions for Rich? These seem relatively self-explanatory. Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the loan say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
This is Doug. I have a question about our loans.
Sure.
Is there any obvious reason why we don't see any school loans for a long time?
Doug, I think the main reason is that schools can generally borrow on a tax-exempt basis and borrow at rates cheaper than we can offer. Some school loans are taxable, and we have a better shot at getting those borrowers, but most school loans are tax exempt and at a lower rate.
Interesting. Because, you know, our program was sort of aimed for schools, and yet we're not making any school loans. But I remember historically we've had that situation before, so I just thought I'd clarify. Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Well, the loans have been approved. Thank you, Rich. And so there is no old business. And moving down to our quarterly investment update. So, Rich, we'll give the floor back to you again.
Thanks, Sarah. You know, the board packet today includes the three regular quarterly reports constructed for the Common School Fund and updated for today's meeting. Let's move on to the first report, which is included as page 9 of your packet. Going across the page, the portfolio report shows the current market value, cost, unrealized gains or losses, yield, and projected income of the common school fund portfolio by asset class. In completing the portfolio report for today, I discovered an error on the same report that was provided to the board at year end. This spreadsheet error added a wrong cell and overstated the cost of our investment in domestic equity. This error also affected total cost and reduced the amount of unrealized gains by the same amount. The error did not impact market values, projected income, or other numbers used throughout the three reports. And I apologize for not catching the error sooner and will email a corrected year-end report to the board members later this week. That corrected report will show a higher unrealized gain and a higher yield at cost than the numbers provided at year-end. On today's report, for the first time in over a year, two of our asset classes are showing unrealized losses. As you know, market interest rates have risen dramatically over the past several months, which has a negative impact on the value of our fixed income securities. The right two columns in this table show the yield and projected income for each of the asset classes. The total annual projected income declined by about $2.3 million from the last quarter, as about $95 million invested in higher yielding fixed income securities was moved to cash. This shift was expected as total trust fund loans declined by about $60 million during the quarter. About 70% of that decline was due to scheduled annual principal payments made in March, with the remainder from prepayments. However, we expect that new loans will outpace prepayments for the remainder of 2022, and both total loans and interest income will recover. The remainder of this shift to cash was from the sale of approximately $35 million in bond ETFs early in January. That sale was made to reduce potential losses from rising market interest rates. Hindsight is 20/20, but I don't mind letting the board know that this sale in January has saved approximately $3.5 million in losses at today's prices. Public equities, including our preferred stock portfolio, also lost ground in Q1. Preferred stocks behave to some extent like fixed income securities in relation to interest rates and will generally lose value when market rates increase. However, whether in fixed income or in equities, lower asset prices do not impact distributable income. Income is only affected if a bond defaults or companies reduce or eliminate dividends, which is not expected in the current environment. As we work to get our cash invested into more productive assets throughout the remainder of the year, we can expect that the projected annual income will again rise to record levels. One bright spot this quarter has been the performance of our real estate assets, where an additional $13 million in unrealized gains helped offset losses in both fixed income and public equities. I think the big picture to take from this page is that our portfolio has fared well in a difficult quarter. Our diversification has helped to maintain unrealized gains of nearly $100 million with an excellent yield of just under 4%. This cushion might prove important should market turbulence continue over the next several years. Are there any questions before we move on to the next page?
Rich?
Yes.
My memory is not perfect, but we've got $160 million in cash. And I remember in the past, you found a place to put that where we could get it back in a hurry, and yet it was doing better than 0.2%. I've forgotten what that was. I bet you remember.
Yeah, that firm is called American Deposit Management, and they have we have used them for some of our cash management purposes in the past, where when they have been able to offer yields greater than the state investment fund. That's not currently the situation. We believe that the state investment fund is a better opportunity for us at this time, even though ADM might be able to provide a slightly higher yield. We like the state investment fund for its liquidity. You know, we're able to get our money out of there right away, and that's a good thing in this environment.
Okay, I just thought 160 was quite a lot, but you think that 1.7 is not a whole lot worse than we could get with that alternative?
Correct. I think what's happening is that the state investment fund, the yield on the state investment fund will be increasing significantly over the next month or two.
Okay, thank you.
Well, let's move on to the asset allocation report on page 10, which shows how we're doing in regards to the target allocation. As you will note in the top section of the report, we remain above the target allocation to state and muni taxable bonds and corporate bonds. State and muni bonds are legacy assets that remain a core element of our strategy and policy. The amount invested in these bonds will be reduced over the next few years through normal bond redemptions. On a separate note, corporate bonds have played an important role producing distributable income over the past few years as interest paid on cash reserves has been near zero. We invested above the target level in corporates as temporary holding place for cash reserves until better opportunities became available. Those opportunities are now on the horizon with private fund commitments. Over the next few years, we believe that moving funds away from publicly traded fixed income ETFs to private debt funds will provide a greater return potential for the level of risk incurred. The higher income level available in private debt funds should also have a positive impact on our annual distribution for years to come. To further this goal, we expect to make additional commitments to private debt during fiscal year 23. The investment committee has been pleased that over the last month, we've been able to start putting cash to work by purchasing federal agency bonds with interest rates well above 4%. We are keeping a close eye on market conditions to take advantage of additional opportunities as they arise. Looking down the chart towards equities, you will see that we remain overallocated to both domestic and global equities, primarily due to the rally in the stock market since the beginning of the pandemic. As discussed in the note two on the previous page, when removing preferred stocks and BXSL, which recently went public and was moved from the private debt allocation, domestic equities are much more in line at about $149 million, or 11% of the portfolio. In the next month or so, I will be presenting to the board a new allocation model for discussion and approval that splits out preferred stocks to improve transparency and clarify those securities as a separate asset class. In December, we made significant commitments to the Nuveen real estate funds that should be fully funded over the next several months. We also made a more recent additional commitment of $13 million to the Invesco U.S. Income Fund, a real estate fund that targets a high distributable income. Once fully funded, these commitments will bring the real estate allocation near the 20% target. Within the private equity venture capital asset class, we are reaching the end of the initial investment period for some of our earlier commitments and expect to see capital gains distributions from these funds beginning over the next 12 to 18 months. The investment committee has also been pleased with the performance of our venture portfolio so far, and we're looking forward to seeing some actual gains rather than projected valuations from these investments. Any distributions are expected to be long-term gains and added to the principal of the Common School Fund. However, you know, one impact of these distributions will be that our total investment within this asset class will be reduced by the same amount. To counter this reduction and bring the total PE venture capital investment closer to the target allocation, the investment community will be making additional investments to venture capital in fiscal year 23. In fact, we've already made two additional commitments and are now waiting for the completion of that documentation. As with our initial commitments made several years ago, the funding of any new private equity or venture capital commitments will likely require a prolonged investment period of 3 to 4 years. Are there any questions on this page before we move forward?
Rich, by chance, do you have the number as far as how much we've committed to just diversifying the portfolio in general over the last 3 years?
Well, I don't have that at the top of my head, but if we take a look at the at this chart, we can see that the market value and commitments of equities and alternatives is pretty significant at over $750 million. You know, prior to the change in the investment policy, we were all fixed income. you know, municipal bonds, agency bonds, and trust fund loans, and that was it. So, you know, I would say that well over 80% of the portfolio has been transformed.
And the reason why I just want to make sure that we highlight that, Rich, because that's a lot of work of you and the investment committee identifying those and actually putting that independent investment authority to work, and we're seeing the results. So just the bottom part is, I think, a very small snapshot of what the entirety of the portfolio has been. But that's great.
Thank you. In the next month or so, you know, taking a look at the final page, you know, this is probably the final time that I will include a progress report within these quarterly report packets. This report was meant to highlight the work of transitioning the Common School Fund portfolio from a historical fixed income portfolio to the approved strategic asset allocation, as Sarah was just describing. But we're nearly there, and I believe that the progress report is becoming less valuable as we get closer to our target allocations. In the future, a more important review will include how our investment returns within each asset class compare to our custom benchmarks. Benchmarking would not have been as meaningful during the portfolio transition, but now will become an important tool for measuring performance. For this quarter, I'd like to point out a few items. Overall, public markets had a rough quarter with stocks and bonds both deteriorating during the first quarter. The index that comprises the aggregate U.S. bond market had a total return, which includes interest payments, of a negative 5.8% in Q1, while the broad U.S. stock market lost 6% during this period. As you can see at the bottom of the middle columns on the progress report, the market value of our portfolio lost 2.5% during the first quarter. Now, this calculation does not include interest and dividends received. And if we had included those numbers, the loss would have been reduced by about 1%. There are two main reasons that the Common School Fund fared well compared to the overall market. Our equity tilt towards dividend-paying stocks has been an important factor. For both domestic and global stocks in Q1, our high dividend ETFs actually moved slightly higher, while broad-based indices were down about 6%. We expect this trend to continue as dividends play a more important role in total returns over the next decade. Second, we have a relatively large commitment to real estate, which has continued to perform extremely well. Our strategic asset allocation includes a larger allocation to real estate than many similar funds because the investment committee and board determined that this asset class provides our beneficiaries with a good amount of distributable income, along with the potential for long-term capital gains. We believe that this heavy weighting to real estate will serve the trust fund well for years to come. On a final note, please refer to the bottom right section of this page and see that we can no longer say that the Common School Fund is absolutely growing faster than the rate of inflation. The Common School Fund grew at a rate of 5.1% during the prior 12 months, which is pretty good given all the headwinds in today's market. However, our growth is lower than both the 40-year average CPI for educational books and materials at 5.3% and the one-year CPI for urban consumers at 8.6%. You know, it's important that we do not overemphasize a one-time statistic. We manage a permanent fund with a long-term time horizon. However, as we enter a more difficult environment for investing, consistently beating the rate of inflation will no longer be a given. You know, overall, I believe that our portfolio is well positioned to continue providing record levels of income distribution to our beneficiaries throughout the foreseeable future, and also growing at a pace faster than the long-term rate of inflation. That's all I have for today, so thank you for your time. Does anybody have any questions?
Rich, I think that you bring up a really good point about the progress report, and I think that's also a point of recognizing the success of the team and how we have now been able to move beyond this. Just I think something to consider is maybe when we do an annual review, just where we are with regard to kind of the asset allocation. And maybe that's also a time to bring up where we are in comparison to inflation, knowing that it doesn't make sense quarterly, but maybe annually, just as a look back. That might be something I think worthwhile. But to your point, like we're reaching there, we're now moving forward and actively managing, which is where we want to be. It's great news.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Any other questions from the commissioners? All right, seeing none. Thank you, Rich. And it looks like we have a few items on the agenda, looking at land in particular. And so just pulling up, the first item is the easement modification at Bear Lake in Oneida County. So Tom, I'm going to give you the floor and maybe you can talk us through this and then we can work through the motion.
Thank you, Sarah. Every once in a while, we will have an easement situation arise. And because of the fact that, in essence, the easements that we're talking about are permanent easements, a permanent encumbrance on lands that we still hold, we ask for board authorization for that. In this particular situation, the board had actually approved an easement long ago, based upon where the parties thought the property line was. But recently, because of the fact that we were going to do a timber sale there, we actually paid for a survey and discovered that the property line was in a slightly different place, which meant that the easement would be in a slightly different place. And so, in essence, what we were looking at doing was modifying that original easement. It would have to go a little bit further. And the fact is, we no longer needed the reciprocal easement from the adjacent property owner because it turned out that the road that we were utilizing is completely on the land that we still own. And so if we were going to give them a little bit more length of an easement, it made sense for them to pay for something for that. And in looking at other public land managers, we felt that $1,000 was an appropriate amount. And so that's what we were asking for, in essence, to lengthen the easement slightly in exchange for $1,000, and we would release the easement that we no longer needed to access our own lands.
So how many acres did we pick up?
I think it was only a couple, actually, because of the fact the line was just slightly further south than we thought it was.
I looked at the picture. Anyway, this is Doug. I'll make a motion that we approve this establishment of these rights for the landowner, $4,000.
$1,000, right? It's and it's the authorizing modifying the 1973 easement. Tom, how do you want us to word that just to make sure we are checking all of our boxes?
Tell you what, why don't I read the resolution that I had prepared? A board member wants to move that would be fantastic. Therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands hereby authorizes staff to modify the 1973 access easement, benefiting the Clement property and burdening the BCPL property, in consideration for Clement's payment of the sum of $1,000 in accordance with Chapter 24 of the Wisconsin statutes, on such terms and conditions as the Executive Secretary determines to be reasonable and necessary. The Executive Secretary is authorized and directed to execute any documents reasonably necessary to complete such transaction.
I so move. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Great. It's been moved and seconded. Any debate or questions for Tom? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the 1973 easement, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Doug.
Aye, Josh.
Great. Modifying the easement, the Clement payment sums is approved, Tom. So we'll move to the next one. This seems to be a theme for today.
So the second one is not necessarily a modification of an existing one, although it should be. Local utility installed overhead lines without getting an easement. And so in this particular situation, we would normally not ask for additional consideration for burying the lines because it's more of a benefit to the property owner like us. But because they didn't get an easement to begin with, we are asking for payment here. So very short easement areas to bury the lines. And $500 is in essence the minimum going rate for those type of things from public landowners in northern Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, I can make the motion that the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands authorizes staff to grant proposed utility easements with the Wisconsin Public Service Corporation in consideration of a payment of the sum of $500 in accordance with Chapter 24 of the Wisconsin statutes on such terms and conditions that the Executive Secretary determines to be reasonable and necessary, and the Executive Secretary is authorized and directed to execute any documents reasonable and necessary to complete the easement. I so move that. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
A second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any other questions for Tom? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Doug, are you going to vote for this one? Well, seeing that there's two that approve, the motion passes. Moving along with the agenda, we have, Rich, we have the Chief Investment Officer's report, but I do feel that you were quite thorough earlier in our meeting today. So I don't know if you have anything else to add.
You know, I have nothing to add at this time other than to say that, you know, over the next a month or so, you know, I will be providing the board with a new asset allocation model potentially to approve, and we'll discuss that at a future meeting.
Wonderful. We look forward to it. Thank you, Rich. Tom, the Executive Secretary's report.
The main thing I wanted to share was that last week I had a chance to attend the Municipal Treasurers of Wisconsin Association meeting in La Crosse. And it's the first time I've been to that in a couple of years because of the pandemic. And I thought it went really well. I was surprised at the amount of turnover in the organization. It appeared that many communities had a new clerk treasurer. And so for a number of them, this was their first opportunity to learn about the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands and the State Trust Fund Loan Program. So had a chance to talk to quite a few of them, and they have asked me to come back and speak at their fall conference. So doubly good. In any event, it was great to be out there talking to people again about our agency and our program. And that's all I have for today.
Wonderful. Well, I do not have a report today. I'll just keep it very simple,
for some reason. I just had to redial in back. Well, I'm now back. Sorry, I missed something.
Well, it's okay, Doug. We did vote for the WPS easement, so I think we're okay. We're moving forward. But Rich didn't have an update. Tom's was very simple, and I don't have a report, so. Are there any future agenda items? Seeing none, I move to adjourn today's meeting.
I second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Like I say, I was cut off and had to redial in. What is the motion we're voting on?
We're just going to adjourn the meeting, Doug. So Josh and I have said that we voted to adjourn. So I think we're good.
Oh, so I missed all the reports.
They're very quick. We didn't. There wasn't any really reports.
Alrighty. I vote aye to adjourn. Yeah, I'm just cut off for about a few minutes. Thank you.
Okay, well, it was unanimous. We will adjourn today's meeting. Thank you, everybody, and look forward to talking again in 2 weeks.
All right. Hello, everybody. Be safe out there. Bye-bye.
Amen. Bye-bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.